information is free.
The law?
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
Tonight, we care.
Appear to border
and it shows.
The law?
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
The temple and began to drive out those who were buying and selling in the temple, and he overturned the tables of the money changers. Welcome, my friends, to episode 92 of Media Monarchy. It's September 19th, 2008. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com. This week, of course, the money changers and the global financial meltdown. We've got the mysterious death of key 9/11 witness Barry Jennings. We've got the 9/11 initiative, immigration, vaccination, police state, pandemics, Yemen, Palin, JFK, and Illuminati agents. It's September 19th, 2008. It's episode 92 of MediaMonarchy.com.
The sound of love.
spiritualized, walking with Jesus. One of my favorites. Got to see him last Monday here in Portland. But welcome. My name's James. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com. And this is episode 92. It's September 19th, 2008. Coming to you live, as always, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, praradio.org. Sunday nights at 7 Eastern Time, revereradionetwork.com. And also KBFR in Boulder and Ground Zero Radio in Atlanta. You can, of course, hit me up, MySpace, Dig, YouTube, Yahoo, IM, Skype, all with Media Monarchy as your keyword. And, of course, the podcast, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org. Hopefully you caught the extra episode a few days ago, 91B. There's more going on than a mere 2 hours a week can contain anymore, it seems. So here we are. Top of the page right now, we must throw the money changers out of the temple. And we recall the one time Christ supposedly got violent. It was when he threw the money changers out, making money off of money, loaning it out, charging interest, usury. It's a sin. So regardless of whether you think any of that's real or not, the stories and the ideals are, and that's how we're going to proceed. So we got a lot of economic news. And I won't claim for a second that I fully understand it all. I do understand this much. The Federal Reserve is neither. It is not federal. It is private. And there are doubtful reserves. They print up the money and they loan it to the United States with interest. Debt-based money. And the other thing I know is that for every dollar you give a bank, they can loan out 10. So it's a giant pyramid scheme, Ponzi scheme. And it's zeros and ones on top of zeros and ones and printing more paper. But let's get into it. This coming from the Big Picture blog. Paulson basically says, Congress has no authority here. And there's a quote. As with any contract, the parties to the agreement may modify the covenants by mutual agreement only. So now, whether or not this ties in with PDD 51, Presidential Decision Directive 51, that basically says Congress has nothing to do with continuity of government, we also here have Hank Paulson, Director of Government Bailouts, basically saying, this doesn't concern you. So, Hank Paulson's God complex just got bigger. The director of government bailouts and the head of the socialism department at Treasury has informed Congress to back off his turf, or all your legislation belongs to us. Now, last time I checked, it was Congress that had the power of authorization disbursements, and that the Treasury does not have the authority to spend $5.3 trillion. Comrade Paulson does not seem to understand the way the different branches of government work in the United States and is apparently unfamiliar with a little parchment called the Constitution. Hey, perhaps we can get Ron Paul to explain how these things work to our friend from the People's Republic of Goldman.
Hello. Today we had a lot of financial fireworks in the markets. A lot of things are going on, and I think we are in the middle of something going on that's very big. It doesn't look like it's going to end real soon. Today, the Federal Reserve came in and offered $85 billion to buy out AIG, and it looks like it's never going to end. They're talking about the next company, whether it's Morgan Stanley or whatever. Already we bailed out Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and Lehman's went bankrupt. And then, of course, Bear Stearns had a bailout not too long ago. And we're talking about big bucks. We're not talking about hundreds of millions or even hundreds of billions. No, we're talking about trillions of dollars. The obligation is immeasurable. Nobody can measure it. And derivatives markets are very much involved. Nobody knows how much you're involved. But all I know is they're starting to unwind. And that is why all these banks and investment companies are in such big trouble. And the only thing they can resort to is coming to the federal government, coming to the Federal Reserve, and asking for a bailout. The interesting thing is like today, we're coming up with this $85 billion. They don't come to the Congress. I mean, the Federal Reserve buys them out. They own it. We as taxpayers now own Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and nobody knows how much that'll cost. That could be into the trillions of dollars. So they don't come to Congress. We don't have appropriations. It's done by secret government, private individuals behind the scenes maneuvering and manipulating and trying to patch things up. But of course, in the meantime, I'm sure there's a few people making a couple bucks out of this whole thing.
This vast company, with its impressive headquarters in New York's financial district, is now owned by the U.S. government. The high price of survival. But it hasn't stopped the financial rot. Wall Street plunged to a three-year low. Morgan Stanley's down 40%. It may be the next investment bank to seek a rescue partner. The Bush administration delivered its justification for rescuing AIG.
Some of these companies were so big that to allow them to fail would have caused even greater harm and damage to the economy.
On the campaign trail, AIG put John McCain on the defensive and gave Barack Obama an opportunity.
Now, on the bailout itself, I didn't want to do that, and I don't think anybody I know wanted to do that. But there were literally millions of people whose retirement, whose investments, whose insurance were at risk here.
This isn't just a string of bad luck. Truth is, though, while you've been living up to your responsibilities, Washington has not.
In the UK, the sponsorship of Manchester United Football Club is AIG's shop window. But the tentacles of this complex company reach much further into everyday life.
Good evening and even congratulations. You are now the proud owner of a massive insurance company. American taxpayers woke up this morning to learn their money makes up most of a bailout package the Federal Reserve slammed together to save a huge insurance conglomerate called AIG because of the belief that the nation couldn't afford to let AIG fail. But can the federal government afford to bail it out? Today, the feds had to print more money. One large money market fund, always considered a safe haven, today froze investors' money for a week. And then came a huge downward spiral on Wall Street. Right before the closing bell, we watched some big stocks plummet. The Dow finished down just under 450 points. By the way, this market is down over 800 points since just Monday.
We are talking more than a half trillion dollars. Now, could taxpayers afford it? Former presidential candidate Ron Paul has a one-word answer, no. Congressman, not convinced, huh?
Oh, no. I think your numbers are low. Let's hope it's only a half a trillion. My numbers are much higher. They're unknown because we, with that legislation to bail out Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, it was unlimited. Let the Treasury decide. So it's going to go up and up, and every day you hear of another emergency.
So what would you have done, Congressman, when, let's say, I guess Freddie and Fannie are the biggest. I know we talk about Bear Stearns that was rescued, Lehman that wasn't, AIG that was. Freddie and Fannie seemed to be like penultimate, that they had to be rescued. Did they?
I don't think so. They should have looked at what I was saying 5 years ago. Somebody put a speech on the internet this morning, which I sort of forgot about. But 5 years ago, before the committee, I said this line of credit to the Treasury is artificial. It's adding fuel to the fire. The Fed's at fault, but you add fuel to the fire with lines of credit, community investment acts, you know, and HUD and all this affirmative action. This causes malinvestment, overbuilding, and it was a bubble forming. And my proposal back then was to remove the line of credit because bubble was forming was going to lead to a lot of trouble. And that's exactly where we are. But you can't solve this problem by saying it's all the Republicans and all the Democrats.
Well, I agree.
It has to do with monetary policy.
I hear you on that. And here's, we're now, we got this, Nicole, right? And now I'm worried that fears cascade upon fears and take out the good with the bad. And that appears to be happening now when big name brokerage houses like Goldman and Morgan that are not nearly as tainted by any of this mortgage stuff get dragged down. Where do you see this going?
It has a long way to go. I think what you're seeing is the unwinding of trillions of dollars of derivatives. Nobody knows about it. When a guy like Warren Buffett admits he doesn't understand them and it's a big mess, you know it's a big mess. So it's the derivatives. Everybody's involved. AIG, I thought, they talk about assets and they were okay and don't worry that much. Turns out that assets had to do with derivatives. And this is all a fiction. It's an expansion. It's part of the bubble that is started by the Federal Reserve. Then everybody speculates. I mean, they buy derivatives on derivatives on derivatives. It has to unwind. You can't build on a weak foundation. And that's what everybody's trying to do. And unless you recognize the problem and say it's an unsound monetary system, you're going to see the destruction of the dollar. I mean, won't people get wondering about going and going to something of real value? I mean, what happened to gold today? Finally, people say, this system is unsound.
I hear Congressman.
Ron Paul blasts secret government running economy. This from Steve Watson. Congressman Ron Paul has issued a stinging address concerning the financial crisis in which he outlines how the current economic problems created via malinvestment and shift to a debt-based economy are now being mismanaged by private interests in secret. What's more, he says he's not sure the Federal Reserve has any idea what to do next and that the Congress is totally oblivious to the whole sorry state of affairs. A cocktail of elements, he warns, puts the middle class of America in serious jeopardy. So we heard a few clips there. We also heard, you know, Brian Williams and NBC, and we heard a little BBC talking about the Federal Reserve rescuing the notorious AIG. Now, what's interesting to note is when all this started to break down with AIG, I first thought, I wonder what Richard Andrew Grove's take on all this was. And he showed up yesterday on the Jack Blood Show on September 18th to talk about AIG and, of course, Maurice Greenberg and their connections with Kroll, Marsha McLennan, and security and fraud at the World Trade Center. So I haven't gotten that clip yet, but I will post that up as soon as I grab it. If we jump to the Financial Post, U.S. gets busy printing money. Out of thin air. Worthless paper. The U.S. Treasury cranked up its printing press yesterday to help the Federal Reserve extend an $85 billion loan to American International Group, AIG, the latest in hundreds and billions of dollars of government assistance that will undoubtedly end up in the lap of U.S. taxpayers. But while anxiety is rising over the United States' ability to foot the gargantuan bill for the credit crisis, analysts say the U.S. 14 trillion U.S. economy should be able to absorb the shock. The key risk is the threat to inflation posed by the seemingly endless expansion of the government's balance sheet if several more financial institutions go belly up. Clearly, this will widen the deficit by quite a bit. Nariman Behavarish, chief economist of Global Insight, said at a presentation in Toronto the other day, but let's be honest, the U.S. is a very, very rich country. We were. We used to be. And if we jump to the AFP, still speaking of the printing presses, the U.S. Federal Reserve announced an $180 billion liquidity line to fight the racing fires of a global financial crisis Thursday and said it was ready to do more. The move came in coordination with other leading central banks to pump cash into the financial system amid a credit squeeze that has dried up lending among commercial banks. The Federal Reserve of New York said in a statement it shortly would arrange a special overnight repo operation, a 24-hour credit to banks needing cash. The New York Fed said it, quote, stands ready to arrange further operations later in the day as needed. And there is one link. I believe yesterday stocks had some bit of rebound in reaction to all the government bailouts. But I saw a funny line that mentioned that AIG has now been dwarfed by Kraft, as if to show how far it's fallen. Now, if we jump to the next post, Economy Meltdown, Economomoney, that's a word I made up. I smashed economy and money together. Nobel Prize winning professor, author, economist Joseph Stiglitz says that the crisis right now is as bad or worse as the Great Depression. So, this from Steve Watson, two-time Nobel Prize winner and former chief economist of the World Bank, Joseph Stiglitz. It's
STIGLITZ, has warned that the current financial crisis will continue for at least another 18 months and in many ways represents a worse situation than the one faced by Americans during the Great Depression of the 1930s. You can paper things over for a while, but eventually you have to face reality.
Well, what I was saying is that there are several things, both about the war and the way that it was financed, that should have been a cause of concern. This was a war of choice. This is a preemptive war. This is a war that, though, that as we went to war, we had a huge deficit, and yet the president asked for a tax cut. And usually, when you go to war, you ask your young men and women to go risk their lives, and then there's a sense of shared sacrifice. And the only sacrifice the president asked was for people to go down to the shopping mall. And there was actually a tax cut for upper-income Americans. Well, the piling up of debt has meant that should a problem occur, and a problem has now occurred, there would be less room for maneuver. We wouldn't be able to do anything. When we had an economic downturn back in 2001, we had a surplus of 2% of GDP, and that gave us a lot of ammunition to use to try to remedy the problem. Now, this year, next year, we're expected to have the largest deficit in America's history, in 1 year hitting $500 billion. Now, that's one problem. The second problem was that the war is, in my judgment, largely responsible for the increase in the price of oil. It was back in 2003, it was $23-$25 a barrel. Futures markets understood that there was going to be increases in demand from China, from other places, but they believed that there would be a concomitant increase in supply from the Middle East. The war changed that equation, and now we have oil $100 a gallon. Now, normally, if a country is spending so much more money abroad as we were importing oil from Kuwait, from Saudi Arabia, from other countries, it's going to weaken the economy, but it didn't seem to be happening. And why? Well, some people said there was new laws of economic. Whenever anybody said that to me, I start getting suspicious. What was going on was very simple. The Fed decided to let forth a flood of liquidity, last regulation. We got a housing bubble. The housing bubble led to a consumption boom. Savings in the United States went down to zero. It sustained the economy for a while, but we were living on borrowed money and borrowed time, and it was just a matter of time before something happened. And so when I looked at what was going on, how the economy continued in spite of the high oil prices, in spite of the war, it was clear to me, and I saw the housing bubble, and I saw what was happening to savings rate. It was, you didn't have to be a genius to say that there were problems around the corner.
Gold soars over 8%. This from Reuters. U.S. gold futures rose 8% on Wednesday, soaring above $840 an ounce as investors poured into the gold market as a safe haven amid heavy losses in stocks and ongoing financial turmoil. Now, if we turn to another one who would know, let's get it straight from the horse's ass's mouth. Billionaire investor George Soros again repeats the line that this is looking like the 1930s.
Well, I'm afraid we are not through it at all. In some ways, we are still heading into the storm rather than coming out of it. And right this minute, we are at a very precarious moment because the bankruptcy of Lehman Brothers has thrown the financial markets into turmoil.
What do you think will happen? More banks to go under?
Well, certainly there are more banks, but maybe not of the size of Lehman, but right now an even larger company, American International Group, which is an insurance company, is under pressure, and a rescue is being prepared, and the question is whether it will be successfully put together.
So is it right then to step in? Do you think AIG should be rescued? Do you think Lehman should have been rescued?
Whether Lehman should have been rescued or not depends on whether the financial financial system survives it or not. If the financial system survives it, then it was the right thing to do to let them go bust. If there is a meltdown, then obviously it wasn't, because there's one thing is clear, that you mustn't allow the financial system to collapse as it did in the 1930s. They've been reluctant to put taxpayers' money at risk, but it's if necessary, I'm sure they will do it.
Hindsight is a wonderful thing. Did Hank Paulson handle these crises well? Did he do the right thing by rescuing Fannie Mae? Was he right to make the decision he did on Lehman Brothers? What for AIG? If you were him, what would you be deciding?
Well, I'm afraid that the way Paulson has been handling the situation is very reminiscent of the way the central bankers talked in the 1930s.
Billionaire investor George Soros has slammed U.S. Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson for behaving in the same manner as banksters in the 1930s and mishandling a financial crisis that threatens a repeat of the Great Depression. Soros told BBC Newsnight that the world was merely at the beginning of a financial storm and warned we mustn't allow the financial system to collapse as it did in the 30s. Referring to Paulson, U.S. Treasury Secretary Soros stated the way Paulson's handling the situation is reminiscent of the way the banksters handled it in the 1930s. Now, of course, remember, George Soros is a former member of the Board of Directors of the Council on Foreign Relations and is ranked by Forbes as the 99th richest person in the world with a net worth of around $9 billion. Soros is, of course, the funder of fake people-powered revolutions, color revolutions. London Telegraph has Wall Street privatizes U.S. government, be very afraid. But if we jump to the International Herald Tribune, Fed to give AIG $85 billion loan and take $80 stake. The Associated Press has the Fed pumping $70 billion into the financial system. Another one from Paul Joseph Watson, run on the bank, Americans could lose their deposits. You know, things are bad when Yahoo.com, the most trafficked website in the world and usually a purveyor of mindless celebrity gossip, cooking tips, and dating advice, features a top story about how Americans could lose their bank deposits following the collapse of Lehman Brothers. For the internet giant to prominently report that there is already a, quote, slow-motion run on banks is indeed a landmark event and precludes even the most ignorant American from claiming they were not forewarned about the unfolding economic catastrophe. The article, linked up for you on Yahoo, points out that although the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, FDIC, guarantees individual accounts up to $100,000, the FDIC fund only has about $50 billion to insure about $100 trillion in assets across the nation's financial institutions. When Americans realize the fact that banks are going to run out of money, the article nonchalantly states, a run on the banks will accelerate. See? The media doesn't always lie. A quick one from Chris Cope, a writer up on clicktohouston.com. Does financial doom mean Mad Max world? Just a quick little pull from it. Apparently, the world economy blew up over the weekend, again, like those 1960s Christmas lights that fire officials always urging our grandparents to throw away. The stupid thing caught fire while no one was looking, and now the holiday season is ruined. And by holiday season, what I really mean is every stock market in the world. We got no money. We can't escape. It's all set to go horribly Mad Max at any moment. Pretty soon we'll start turning on each other like cable news hosts. But if we return to seriousness, at the New York Times, Wall Street in worst loss since, you guessed it, 9/11. In another unnerving day for Wall Street, this I believe referring to the 15th Monday, investors suffered their worst losses since the terrorist attacks of 2001 and government officials raced to prevent the financial crisis from spreading. And then there's a bunch of other links and related things. Again, stocks dropping, S&P 500 sinks most since 9/11. Greenspan says this is the worst economy I've ever seen. And he would know, because he's partly responsible. Washington Post has unemployment rate jumps to five-year high. Cryptagon has global financial catastrophe. Global Research has U.S. financial system in serious trouble. We've got the FDIC shutting down Silver State Bank of Nevada. Oh, and McCain's son served on failed Silver State Bank's board until July. That from CBS. Goldman Sachs net plunges 70%. Financial elite deciding Lehman's fate during emergency meetings in New York. Lehman heads towards Brinks as Barclays ends talks, and more and more and more. There's also a clip from The Daily Show, and that's where I got the tag, the notorious AIG. So, my bank is about to fail. How about yours? Washington Mutual has tumbled 30%, if not more, since I posted that up a couple days ago, Wednesday on the 17th. But this from Reuters, Washington Mutual, WAMU, you know. WAMU shares sank 30% to a 17-year low, and the perceived risk of its debt soared on worries that the largest U.S. savings and loan will not find a buyer or raise enough capital to combat soaring mortgage losses. Analysts attributed the decline in part to anxiety that potential buyers might walk away because of a pending accounting rule requiring they value the assets of targets at market prices. We also have from Reuters, J.P. Morgan in talks to acquire Washington Mutual. J.P. Morgan Chase & Company is in advanced discussions to acquire Washington Mutual Incorporated, a source familiar with the discussion said on Friday. They're in advanced talks, the source told Reuters. They also said the sensitive talks have been going on for some time, and J.P. Morgan had conducted a lot of due diligence into WAMU. The downgrade of Washington Mutual by Moody's Investor Service helped advance the discussions between the two companies, and basically, they've been cut to junk. So, let's get a little bit more into the banks in crisis, Washington Mutual rating lowered, and the question, who's going to buy WAMU?
Top story, the rout in global equities. As we've been reporting, stocks in Asia posting their biggest one-day fall in 8 months, with Japan's Nikkei and TOPIX heading for a three-year low. It follows a slide on Wall Street, where the S&P 500 posted its steepest drop since the 9/11 terrorist attack 7 years ago. More than $600 billion was wiped off the market's value. Yesterday, the focus was on Lehman Brothers, which filed for bankruptcy protection and the forced sale of Merrill Lynch to Bank of America. Today, the spotlight's on American International Group. The insurer's credit ratings have been downgraded by both Standard & Poor's and Moody's, threatening its ability to raise emergency funds and keep it afloat. Similar story for Washington Mutual. America's biggest U.S. savings and loan firm has had its credit rating cut to junk by S&P.
Is somebody about to buy Seattle-based Washington Mutual? That's the question swirling around Wall Street as rumors today spread that J.P. Morgan might buy the troubled savings and loan. A sale could have a big impact in Seattle. King 5's Bernard Choi joins us live near Quest Field with a story, because WAMU's name is on the theater there, right?
Absolutely, Gene. It's a great example of WAMU's presence here in Seattle. We're here at the WAMU Theater, and inside is a United Way party for volunteers who gave their time today. Among them are hundreds of WAMU workers. Washington Mutual employees today tend to the grounds at Bailey Gatzert Elementary, clearing weeds and planting new flowers. It's one of the ways for a company known for lending money to also lend a hand in the community. And the recipients are very grateful.
It really impacts the way we're feeling. And when we're feeling better, then, you know, we pass that on to the kids.
Washington Mutual was founded in Seattle in the late 19th century, soon after the devastating fire that almost destroyed the local economy. WAMU went on to become a powerhouse, one of the biggest banks in the country. But now it faces a crisis that threatens its own existence.
People are talking about that. They're talking about Washington Mutual. We are getting wildly divergent stories.
On CNBC today, rumors swirled about a possible sale of WAMU. WAMU stock has plunged as the economy has lost billions this year and expects even more trouble ahead. On Monday, WAMU replaced its CEO, signed, some analysts say, paves the way for the company to be bought out.
It would be a catastrophe for Seattle.
Economics writer John Talton says a sale could affect some of the more than 4,000 WAMU employees in the Seattle area. What about the premium office space downtown and the cachet of having WAMU here?
All of that would go away, and we would just be a branch office town that way.
While the WAMU Family 4th Fireworks Show may be the most visible, it's not the only event WAMU makes possible. Their sponsorship of the Zoo Tunes concert series helps the Woodland Park Zoo raise hundreds of thousands for the animals. WaMu also backed the Seattle Art Museum and the Pacific Northwest Ballet. And if shown by their volunteer gardeners, WaMu has been a very good corporate citizen.
We've been a long-time partner with United Way of King County in everything that we've done as long as I've been here.
So will this one day be the J.P. Morgan Theater or any other name? Well, that's to be seen. The charities that we talked to, including United Way, say they've had examples of this before, like Bon Marché. When it got bought out, they still retained a presence here, though they changed the name to Macy's. Live in Seattle tonight, I'm Bernard Choi, King 5 News.
Bernard, thank you. Analysts say a possible scenario is to split Washington Mutual, sell it in parts. WaMu officials maintain the company is well capitalized, and they say it can navigate this turbulence.
So that second piece there, I swiped from King 5 TV out of Seattle, posted up to youtube.com/mediamonarchy, but it's a funny little kind of human interest story trying to get you to not lose faith in Washington Mutual, telling you what good corporate citizens they are. But if we jump to some straight talk from LouRockwell.com, talking about bank failures, as the fraudulent fractional reserve banks go down, the FDIC insurance fund is running out. WaMu would more than empty it. I assume the Treasury will make good on its guarantee with depreciating dollars, but there's no telling about timing. Bush could close the banks. Various executive orders give him the cover, and could impose a waiting period on withdrawing insured deposits. It's tough to know what to do, but I'd be sure to have some cash and gold outside the banking system and in your own control. Professor Joe Salerno has argued against the fractional reservist that the FDIC has in effect given us 100% reserves, or rather led people to act as if we had honest banking. Seldom did people worry about their bank's soundness. We're about to find out how well fractional reserves work in the absence of the FDIC. It'll still exist, but people will not believe it, and there will be bank runs galore. Act now so you're not stymied by that. One last update, just within the last night. This from the Associated Press. WaMu appears headed for sale. Ailing bank Washington Mutual appeared headed toward a sale Wednesday after major investor removed a potential stumbling block and nervous banking regulators began approaching the most logical buyers. The New York Times, citing unidentified people familiar with the matter, said an auction of the bank was already underway, and the Wall Street Journal reported Wells Fargo and Citigroup expressed interest in a takeover. WaMu, Wells Fargo, and Citigroup all declined to comment. So we shall see. Now, the first one of this latest global economic shakedown was Lehman Brothers. So jumping back to early on Monday, September 15th, Lehman files for bankruptcy. This from the BBC. Wall Street bank Lehman Brothers has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection after emergency talks to find a buyer failed. Confidence in the 150-year-old investment bank, the fourth largest in the U.S., crumbled last week amid growing concerns that its large portfolio of mortgage-backed assets was worth far less than it was originally valued. During the past year, Lehman reported billion-dollar losses and saw its share price plummet more than 95%.
You were down outside Lehman's last night watching what's going on. Just tell us about it.
Well, it was really a most unusual spectacle, Andrew. Kind of a once-in-a-lifetime thing. Although that I should correct myself. We saw that with Bear Stearns 6 months ago, so maybe it's not such a once-in-a-lifetime thing. But it is the fourth largest investment bank in the world. And watching dozens and scores and up to hundreds of employees coming out with their boxes, paintings, umbrellas, flowers, some of them almost giddy, just glad to be getting out in the street, others, you know, really feeling the pain, and it's etched on their faces, some of them mad and yelling out the crowd, jackals, at the people who are watching. So it was an extremely emotional experience.
You've been following this story, obviously, from the start when the subprime first raised this ugly head. Andy, at the heart of the Lehman story, what went wrong?
Well, most simply put, you know, this is a company that leveraged up, took on too much debt, and thought the good times would never end. That's in its most simplistic term. The company sold all sorts of derivatives and subprime mortgages, and then underlying those subprime mortgages were real American householders. And when those teaser rates ended and they went up, they were unable to pay back these mortgages. That plus, as the housing market deteriorated, people started to default on their mortgage, which made the investments that Lehman Brothers held worthless. So they could not pay back their creditors. That's what exactly what happened.
Lehman Brothers had 26,000 some odd employees and many hundreds who worked here in the city of London. And of course, over the weekend, lots of rumors. We knew last week that things were getting pretty bad, but of course this morning they were coming to work with their fate unknown. And CNN caught up with a couple of them, and this is what they said as they were heading into work this morning.
Basically, everybody's just finishing up. That's it.
Will you come back tomorrow?
No, that's it. That's it.
Do you know how many get paid on Friday payday?
We don't know. We don't know anything yet. I work on the trading floor.
What's
yeah.
the mood like in there?
Oh, terrible. Death. It's like a massive earthquake.
Hi, sorry. Do you work for me?
Yeah, I do. But
and how do you feel about what's happening?
Very upset.
And what is the next? What is happening now?
I really don't know. I'm sorry.
It's very sad. I mean, for a bank like Lehman's been here since 150 years, you know, I mean, it's really sad.
And so there you have it, my friends. Global economic breakdown. And so it's all up there for you on MediaMonarchy.com. And we'll be following it as it all seemingly falls apart. Now it's time to get to a bit of the other important news of the last week. This not exactly on a global scale like the financial bit, but important nonetheless. Barry Jennings, key witness to World Trade Center Building 7 explosions, dead at 53. Now, if you'll recall, before I get into this, it's only been a couple months since I played the new interviews and the new clips with Barry Jennings. They're featured in Jason Burmes' new documentary, Fabled Enemies. So, this was first broken, I believe, by Aaron Dykes over at InfoWars. Barry Jennings, a key 9/11 witness who was an emergency coordinator for the New York Housing Authority, has passed away at age 53 from circumstances not yet disclosed. A spokesperson for the Housing Authority has now confirmed his death after weeks of rumors circulating online but refused to give any further details. This office has not yet been able to contact anyone in the Jennings family, and the official cause of death is not yet known, but online comments have reported the date of his death as August 19th. So, the update from Wednesday afternoon. New York City Housing Authority spokesman Howard Marder has now officially confirmed that Barry Jennings indeed passed away approximately a month ago after several days in the hospital, matching confirmations from several other employees at the Housing Authority. Marder commented that Jennings was a great man, well-liked by everyone at the Housing Authority, and that he would be missed. Now, back to the original article. It is very unusual that a prominent and controversial 9/11 witness would die only days before the release of NIST's report on Building 7, and shortly after a firestorm erupted over his testimony that he heard explosions inside the building prior to collapse of either tower, and that there were dead bodies in the building's blown-out lobby. The BBC aired The Third Tower as part of their conspiracy files, I believe, in July, in an attempt to debunk Barry Jennings' account, which is both contradictory and damaging to the official 9/11 story. They did this by making issue over whether he said he saw dead bodies in the lobby. And they cleverly edit some of his interviews. Yet Jennings' own statement in an exclusive interview with Dylan Avery and Jason Burmes, which has not been denied, was, quote, "The firefighter who took us down kept saying, 'Don't look down.' And I said, 'Why?' And we were stepping over people. You know, you can feel when you're stepping over people." Now, the release of Jason Burmes' Fabled Enemies is giving further exposure to Jennings' controversial account. The film features a full interview with Barry Jennings, as well as the statements he and Michael Hess, who was also trapped with him inside Building 7, made to news media on the day of the attacks. Barry Jennings reiterated in the exclusive interview his confusion over the explanation for Building 7's collapse, given that he clearly heard explosions inside the building.
"I'm just confused about one thing and one thing only.
why World Trade Center 7 went down in the first place. I'm very confused about that. I know what I heard. I heard explosions. The explanation I got was it was the fuel oil tank. I'm an old boiler guy. If it was a fuel oil tank, it would have been one side of the building. Yes, you can use this footage.
So that's the clip, and we played that when it was first made available a few months ago. That interview was not released until June 2008 at the request of Mr. Jennings, who had received numerous threats to his job and asked that it be left out of Loose Change Final Cut because of those threats. Jennings' statements have lit fire to questions about what really caused the sudden collapse of Building 7, just as NIST had hoped the release of their report would quash widespread beliefs the building was brought down by controlled demolition. News of Jennings' death comes on the heels of losing another 9/11 hero and eyewitness, Kenny Johanneman, who reportedly committed suicide 12 days before the 7th anniversary of 9/11. Johanneman is credited with saving at least one man's life on 9/11 and was also a witness to explosions in the towers. His story, which we went over last week, I believe, just last week, another key 9/11 witness dead, Kenny Johanneman. His story is exactly that of William Rodriguez. Explosion, plane hit. NIST's report, as well as that of the 9/11 Commission, which did not even mention Building 7, completely ignored statements from the building's leaseholder, Larry Silverstein, as well as numerous police, firefighters, and other eyewitnesses who have testified that they were warned about the building's collapse and told to get back. One rescue worker, Kevin McPadden, even heard a countdown for the building's implosion. Unfortunately, Barry Jennings, whose testimony was ignored by the 9/11 Commission, can no longer raise questions personally about his experience inside Building 7, but his account will remain on the record and available in full, online, and in Fabled Enemies, and that what he witnessed about 9/11 can't be ignored. Bad news, and we'll see what happens with the mysterious death of key 9/11 witness Barry Jennings. So now let's just get into what is seemingly daily, weekly news surrounding 9/11 and the ongoing crumbling cover-up. Picking up some of the events of the last week or so, of course, with the 7th anniversary, there's a lot of international 9/11 truth going on. So posted up under 9/11, Russian TV, Italian Truth, Ventura, McKinney, Osama, and more. First, from Russia Today, U.S. citizens demand truth on 9/11. 7 years after the 9/11 tragedy in New York, there are many people who say they don't trust the official version of events. The U.S. government denies all conspiracy theories, but skeptics say there are still more questions than answers.
It's been a while since the streets of New York saw something like this. Tragedy that shook the world. These people say they want answers.
Where did we end up? We ended up in Iraq. Went up in Afghanistan. Millions of people died. It's a horrible tragedy. And the government covered it up.
According to the 9/11 Truth Movement, the goal of officials behind 9/11 was to justify America's wars and increase domestic control.
Hundreds of protesters have come out onto the streets of New York City. They're challenging the results of the official investigation into 9/11. They say what they want is the truth.
They roam the streets chanting and held peace signs in front of where the Twin Towers used to stand. Meanwhile, some Americans say the beliefs of the movement are too controversial and offensive.
I don't believe in conspiracy theories. I have faith in our government.
Some say the Truth Movement's way of demanding answers is too confrontational, and that's what turns people off.
Asking legitimate questions is good, and I think that they are asking the right questions, but I do think that sometimes they go about it the wrong way.
Protesters, however, say more people support them than some are ready to admit.
Just check the time. It was like 10 minutes to give away 66 inside job t-shirts.
Those questioning the reasons behind 9/11 say the response to what they do is often violent because realizing their government has allegedly been corrupted is hard for some Americans.
in the United States, people have been convinced that the government loves them and that there's nothing to fear. Whereas I'm sure in Russia, if you say something bad about the government, people are actually more likely to listen to what you have to say.
Keep telling us that no, nothing really happened. It was a bunch of guys in the cave, you know, that literally brought down, you know, brought an entire country to its knees. You know, it's just a load of horse crap. And honestly, it's like, yo, people need to wake up.
These people say they will continue to come out onto the streets because of all those who fell victim to the tragedy of 9/11. And until the time comes when there are less questions than answers. Anthesia Chirkina, RT, New York.
That clip gets a little messy, but the whole clip is up from RussiaToday.com, and now going along with that is a new poll. 84% up on RussiaToday.com say truth about 9/11 being deliberately hidden, right up from Steve Watson. A new poll from major Russian news outlet reveals that 84% believe that the truth behind the 9/11 attacks is being deliberately hidden by the U.S. At the time of writing, the poll on the Russia Today website indicates that only 16% of readers feel that the 9/11 Commission report represents the full extent of the evidence as to who carried out the attacks. The 84% figure mirrors almost exactly that of similar polls conducted in 2006 and 2004. And there's links for you to those polls. Staying in Russia, Russia State TV discussion on 9/11 following the broadcast of the documentary Zero, which we've mentioned previously. YouTube links for Friday evening's historic telecast on Russia State TV Channel 1 have been posted, and the discussion following the telecast of Zero, an investigation into 9/11, is all linked up, and so hopefully someone's working on an English translation because it's in Russian. So we'll see. This from the AFP. Medvedev likens Georgia attack to 9/11. Russian President Dmitry Medvedev likened Georgian military action against its breakaway province of South Ossetia to the 9/11 attacks. Quote, almost immediately after these events, it occurred to me that for Russia, August 8, 2008 was almost like September 11, 2001 in the United States. There were many useful lessons from 9/11 in the United States. I would like the world to draw its own lessons from what happened. Speaking of in August, and he said that the world changed. But if we jump over to the Jerusalem Post, former Syrian minister, 9/11 was an inside job. The Syrian government daily Teshreen marked the 7th anniversary of 9/11 this week in a unique fashion by publishing an article by Syria's former information minister blaming U.S. intelligence agencies for the attacks. According to Makhdi Dakhala, in a piece that appeared Wednesday, the intel agencies were behind 9/11 attacks to provide a pretext for a pre-planned U.S. plan to invade Iraq and Afghanistan. Quote, these plans were ready and prepared in advance, and all that was needed was to find a pretext to begin their immediate implementation. Of course, that's all true. The orders to attack Afghanistan were on Bush's table before 9/11. Troops were massing on their borders. But if we jump to south of the border, Mexico and U.S. find no links since 9/11. This from the Associated Press. Mexico says it has arrested 12 people on terrorism charges in the years since 9/11, but an official said none were linked to Muslim extremist groups like Al-Qaeda, nor were any planning to strike in the U.S. Officials from both nations say there hasn't been any sign of the southern U.S. border becoming an entry point for terrorists, as has been feared after the suicide jetliner hijackings that struck New York and Washington. But if we hop on up to the East Valley Tribune, out of Minnesota, by way of 911blogger.com, Jesse Ventura says government not telling the 9/11 story. Jesse Ventura, the former Minnesota governor and professional wrestler, an actor, an author, accompanied a state senator, that's Karen Johnson, to Arizona's 9/11 memorial to press his claims that the government isn't telling the truth about the attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. We'll be right back. There's another half-hour video of Jesse Ventura battling it out with conspiracy debunkers. But if we jump to Run Cynthia Run, a channel up on YouTube, they've got a clip of Cynthia McKinney at 9/11 First Responders event that was on the 7th anniversary. Cynthia McKinney, Green Party presidential candidate, talks at a benefit for 9/11 First Responders. And of course, we know a disproportionate number of first responders are ill as a result of the toxic conditions at the 9/11 site. The government does not acknowledge the toxic conditions, nor is it offering significant support to the first responders or the survivors. One key to changing that is House Bill H.R. 3543, which would provide such resources. And of course, Cynthia McKinney supports such legislation and would go even further than that, she being seemingly the only presidential candidate that's fully behind 9/11 Truth.
To know that I might not be so eloquent tonight because I'm suffering from a severe case of outrage. Watching that film and the other films that have been done on the plight of the first responders, I think the 535 members of Congress kind of got it wrong. Because, you know, they should be leaping not only to co-sponsor this legislation, but to get it passed. And the power of a United States senator, I've seen it in action. When senators don't like something, they use something called a hold or a filibuster. And so, honestly, while the legislation is extremely important, this should have been passed in the appropriations bill years ago. First responders and their families and their supporters shouldn't have to go traipsing up to Washington. Washington should be down here. But as I think about it, Washington, D.C. is here because, as I recall, it's government of, for, and by us. Then it's up to us to change Washington, D.C. We change those people in Washington, D.C. We have the power to sweep the Congress clean. And so as I look in this room, I see future members of Congress. I see future leaders, policymakers, so that we don't have to beg and ask for anything, but we write the public policy ourselves. Briefly, because actually, like maybe 30 minutes ago, I didn't even have a voice. My voice was gone. And all of a sudden, I guess seeing the film, Save the Brave, it just brought something up out of me. And so at least I've got a voice just for this few moments.
Cynthia McKinney speaking at a 9/11 First Responders benefit. And of course, she just mentioned Save the Brave, the documentary we went over on a previous episode. And I believe also on a previous episode, we mentioned that the New York 9/11 ballot initiative had achieved the 30,000 signatures it needed to jump the first hurdle. They had a big press conference that day, and I believe it was on the anniversary, and now some of the videos are up. And so we're going to hear some of the people at this event, and that's Les Jameson, Father Frank Morales, Dr. William Pepper, Cynthia McKinney, and Chris Burke.
An NYC 9/11 ballot initiative, which has recently hit a very, very magic number, a milestone. A minimum of 30,000 signatures are required to place this issue on the ballot. And as of this past Monday night, September the 8th, we counted in excess of 30,000 signed signatures. Applause, folks, is for all of us. This is for all of us. So many of you have worked hard on this, been watching this, and have been supporting this, and we thank you. Please bring up our local legendary activist, Father Frank Morales.
Hey, hey.
Thank you. It's great to see you all here. And again, spread the word. There's a phrase, power the people. It's like a lot of phrases like that. Unless it's made real, it's just an abstract phrase. And this ballot initiative is just one tactic among a number of other tactics in terms of the struggle for 9/11 truth. There's all kinds of different ways to go about, you know, getting to the bottom of this case. This ballot initiative, though, has the potential of not only, you know, getting itself on the ballot and getting people to vote for it, but empowering thousands of people in the process. Because don't forget that it's the people that ultimately have the power and can shape their destiny. And that's partly what this ballot initiative is about. Without further ado, Dr. William Pepper, where are you? There he is.
How many times have I heard that and wanted not to come forward? I want to humbly pay credit to people who have done what I have not done as a citizen of this republic, who have researched and investigated now for a number of years various aspects of what happened at 9/11. Secondarily, the people who have worked so hard to gather these signatures, to get to the first milestone that Les Jamison was talking about. All of those people who have been on the streets weekend after weekend, day after day, gathering signatures to take this movement to that vital point.
Let's have a round of New York welcome.
That we know that 935 times our government lied to us in the lead up to the war against Iraq and now Iraq's occupation. 935 times not only did our government lie to us, but the corporate media also aided and abetted the government's lying to the American people. This is not something that is new, though. This is not something that has not happened before.
Please bring up Chris Burke.
I hope that applause is for yourself and not for me, for all that you've done. You know, here we are, another September 11th, another anniversary. You know, I spent this morning in the pit at Ground Zero where those towers once stood with hundreds, with thousands of 9/11 family members whose lives have been consumed, have been destroyed by evil. I'd like to echo something Dr. Pepper said just a moment ago. You know, all that's necessary for evil to prevail is for good men to do nothing.
We're now into hour number two of Media Monarchy. It's episode 92, September 19th, 2008. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com. Coming to you live, as always, every Friday morning from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and Sunday nights at 7 from the Revere Radio Network.com. More to get into related to 9/11, a decade's worth of messages and interviews from OBL, Osama bin Laden, Tim Osman, Emmanuel Goldstein, the Boogeyman, have been leaked to the web. 10 years of messages and interviews with al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden have been leaked. Translated by the United States Central Intelligence Agency, the documents were posted on a blog last Friday with a link for you to download the hundreds of pages long mega and a half PDF for you. Posted to Secrecy News on September 12th and copied to similar sites, including WikiLeaks.org, the 10 years of messages span from 94 to 2004. The packet, issued in 2004, is nearly 300 pages and labeled official use only. It was translated by the Foreign Broadcast Information Service, FBIS, a division of the CIA, and includes interviews with bin Laden from various news agencies and also includes messages he sent directly to the U.S. One message includes bin Laden's denial of having anything to do with the 9/11 attacks. And again, this is from Wikinews. Quote, following the latest explosions in the United States, some Americans are pointing the finger at me, but I deny that because I have not done it. The United States has always accused me of these incidents, which have not been caused, or rather, which have been caused by its enemies. Reiterating once again, I say that I have not done it, and the perpetrators have carried this out because of their own interest, end quote, said bin Laden on September 16th, 2001, just 5 days after 9/11. And like I said, you can download that full linked, hundreds of pages of interviews from the Boogeyman. And speaking of Boogeyman and fears, this from Threat Level, terrorism fear could create psychosomatic epidemic. Americans' fear of a terrorism, could create a mass outbreak of psychosomatic illness even in the absence of any real attack, creating a fake epidemic that could overwhelm hospitals attempting to treat real victims. Adding to the confusion, the symptoms of a mass psychogenic illness look much like symptoms of an anthrax attack, avian flu outbreak, or chemical attack. At least, that's what the feds warned hospitals in a non-public 2006 communique recently published by the government's sunshine site, WikiLeaks. In fact, the feds suggest that there's already been a totally terrorism fear-related illness in California where no one was actually sick from an attack. In that case, a man walked into a California bank in October 03, sprayed an aerosol can into the air, and left. Employees and customers became ill, though investigators found there was no biological or chemical agents in the air. And a note is, proof of this incident is attributed to a November 2003 FBI report that is also considered too sensitive for the public's eyes. Perhaps most seriously, after the deadly sarin gas attacks in Tokyo in 1995, some 5,000 people went to the hospital claiming to have symptoms despite the attack's rather small radius. 12 people were killed by the gas and 54 others sustained serious injuries. But again, 5,000 people went to the hospital. The analysis recommended that the government and health system educate people about chemical and biological attacks so they can recognize real symptoms, as well as quickly isolating both real and psychosomatic victims in the case of an attack or perceived attack. The July 5th, 2006 analysis entitled Fear of Terrorist Attack Could Trigger Mass Psychogenic Illness, and it's linked up, it's a little small PDF for you. But the analysis from the Homeland Infrastructure Threat and Risk Analysis Center is not classified. Instead, it's labeled for official use only, a designation that allows the data to be shared with people without clearances, but away from the public eye. Such material is usually not available through government sunshine requests. If we jump to the Hindustan Times, hackers block Al-Qaeda's 9/11 anniversary terror tape. And I believe last week we mentioned they were supposed to have an anniversary tape, but oh, apparently something got hacked. And this whole story seems a little shaky. Hackers prevented Al-Qaeda from releasing a videotape to mark the 7th anniversary of 9/11. Al-Qaeda has traditionally issued a video or audio tape by either Osama bin Laden or Zawahiri, the terror network's two leaders, to mark their massive terror attack in the U.S. As-Sahab, Al-Qaeda's media unit, had indicated earlier in the week that it would post such a videotape on the anniversary. As-Sahab had banner images on the internet showing a silhouetted head with a question mark and the words, "Wait, 11th September." The U.S.-based intelligence group Intel Center had speculated the video would be a message from Osama or Zawahiri with a recording of the last will and testament of Mohammed Atta, one of the leaders of the 9/11 attackers. Sources close to U.S. intelligence said, quote, hackers knocked out Al-Qaeda's online means of communication, thus preventing them from posting anything to commemorate the anniversary. Western intelligence suspects two hackers who have targeted Islamist sites before, Aaron Weisbird from Internet Haganah and Rusty Shackelford, quote-unquote, from the web group My Pet Jawa. Now, there's links for you, and Rusty Shackelford denies it. There's also the story from Danger Room, Al-Qaeda's propaganda sites smacked down. So, just one more shady layer to the Al-Qaeda media label with all their, you know, remixes and YouTube releases and things. But again, like I've always said, if you posted a video of, you know, you and your friends on a crime spree or some stupid shit, they would track you down in a minute. It's been done. But somehow, the most wanted terrorist organization in the world can always post videos and interviews and audio clips, but now we just have no idea where they're coming from. And there's some shady middleman, like I said, Intel Center or Site or God knows what, putting out these remixes. Neil Krawitz from Wired said they've been faked. And then, of course, retracted. But let's switch gears. Let's get into some miscellaneous updates and other news. Hadron Hack, some obituaries, Paul, Barr, and Jones. So, two bits on the LHC, the Large Hadron Collider. Update, this broke yesterday, I believe, from the Associated Press and other places. Transformer glitch shuts down biggest atom smasher. The world's largest particle collider malfunctioned within hours of its launch to great fanfare, but its operator didn't report the problem for a week. In a statement Thursday, the European Organization for Nuclear Research, CERN, C-E-R-N, reported for the first time that a 30-ton transformer that cools part of the collider broke, forcing physicists to stop using the Atom Smasher just a day after it started up on September 10th. CERN had not reported any problems with the project since its September 10th launch, but issued its statement shortly after the AP called and, you know, asked about rumors of troubles. So the other one, another hacker hit, this from Computer World, hackers hit Large Hadron Collider. Hackers defaced one of the websites of the LHC earlier in the week, but the controversial science project network suffered no permanent damage, a CERN spokesman said. The attack took place Monday, 2 days before the massive collider ran its first operational test. A group going by the name Greek Security Team, or GST, claimed responsibility for the defacement of one of the LHC sites, according to a report earlier Friday in the UK newspaper The Telegraph. Hackers ended the long message that temporarily replaced the CERN site with the line, "We are 2600. Don't mess with us." A couple noteworthy obituaries, first from the San Francisco Guardian. Peter Camejo, co-founder of the Green Party, has passed away. That's C-A-M-E-J-O. Third-party political activist Peter Camejo, a perennial candidate for state and national office who helped pioneer the financial market niche of socially responsible investments, died last Saturday. He also helped found the California Green Party in 91 and ran three times for governor of California. He also ran as independent Ralph Nader's vice presidential running mate in 04. In 1976, he ran for president as the Socialist Workers' Party candidate. Mr. Camejo described himself as a watermelon. Red on the inside, green on the outside. The other obituary coming from Time Magazine, David Foster Wallace, the author of Infinite Jest, has hung himself at the age of 46. He might be remembered as the guy who brought footnotes back, or the person who magnified Thomas Pynchon's reader reaction paranoia into postmodern mega-epic. He did do those things, but Wallace was also the greatest horror novelist ever. This is Joel Stein writing, a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek way. In Infinite Jest, a corporation-run, unified North America of the near future is being decimated by a videotape so entertaining that people watch it on a loop, mesmerized until they die of dehydration or starvation or lack of sleep. Reading it, you realize how soul-sad lonely you are. And David Foster Wallace creates that effect, like Pynchon, while also being laugh-out-loud funny. So a goodbye to Peter Camejo and David Foster Wallace. Too many obituaries this week on Media Monarchy. If we shift gears to the Minnesota Independent, again, still picking up the pieces from the flurry of the 9/11 anniversary and the political conventions, RNC tried to cancel the Ron Paul Rally for the Republic, as well as the Rage Against the Machine concert. Here's a behind-the-scenes postscript about the lengths to which the planners of the RNC went to ensure the appearance of a discord-free GOP. They tried to scuttle Ron Paul's counter-convention across the river in Minneapolis, and the next night's Rage Against the Machine concert as well. Speaking on background, well-placed sources at City Hall and Target Center have confirmed to Minnesota Independent that in the days before Ron Paul's rally for the Republic at Target Center was publicly announced, representatives of the RNC host committee contacted officials at Target Center and the city of Minneapolis, which oversees the facility, to push for the cancellation of the event. They also sought the cancellation of the Rage Against the Machine concert that took place at the Target Center on September 3rd, the third night of the RNC. More Ron Paul news, this from WikiNews. The Libertarian Party has tried to put up a motion chastising Ron Paul for not endorsing Bob Barr. The Libertarian National Committee, the LNC, continues to be in a fierce deadlock over how to address the growing controversies surrounding their party's U.S. presidential nominee, former Congressman Bob Barr. Many libertarians have spoken out against Barr since his last-minute refusal to attend former Republican presidential hopeful Congressman Ron Paul's third party unity conference at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. on September 10th. One faction of the 17-member LNC, led by at-large representative Dr. Mary Ruart, R-U-W-A-R-T, who lost the Libertarian Party's presidential nomination to Barr at the National Convention in May by only a few votes, is supporting a resolution to apologize to Paul. This is being countered by another faction led by Treasurer Aaron Starr, who favors a resolution to chastise Paul for not endorsing Bob Barr and, quote, splitting the freedom movement. Another update on top of that, again from WikiNews, is the possibility that Bob Barr is trying to remove his running mate, Wayne Root. Now, if we go international yet again and go to Iranian television, Press TV, our man Alex Jones made an appearance on there, so let's check it out up on Press TV. Alex Jones yelling and screaming about Georgia and Russia.
Look, I'm no fan of Vladimir Putin. I'm no fan of what Russia's doing. The point is, Russia is not expanding. Russia has NATO encircling it, moving in missile systems, moving in advisors, moving in weapons, moving in ships, moving in aircraft. It's certainly a provocative move by the United States, by the criminals that run our country, and I don't want that done in our name. And then you have the United States swearing that they wouldn't make Kosovo independent, and last year made it independent. I mean, this is outrageous. That's why you saw Russia build up. Russia saw the Georgia forces building up, and Russia had spies in Georgia.
It said that Kosovo would have an act of self-determination. It had its act of self-determination. The people there, who had previously been massacred and shipped out of bayonet point by the Serbs, who regarded them as alien Turks and Muslims, overwhelmingly,
all sides were killing each other.
We'll come back to
this. You know, the ITN thing,
the Soviet Union broke up. For better or worse, the deal that was accepted by all the parties was that the previous boundaries would be accepted. Kosovo had, in everything except name, was a constituent republic of the Federal Republic.
Classic.
In the Soviet Union.
10 down the street line.
The boundaries that Stalin drew.
The great game, huh, buddy?
In the 30s.
Playing the little people off against each other.
Difficulties otherwise are so bad. Well, can you imagine
what the
Russians when Chechnya tried to get autonomy? They didn't say, oh, all of these people have separate passports and we should respect their right to self-determination.
All right, now,
what about
U.S. finance deal,
just like having
the Mujahideen attack the Russians in 1979 to get a Russian response to set them up. I'm saying what the Russians did in Afghanistan was good? No. I'm saying I don't want a new Cold War. I don't want my children drafted. Okay, it's clear the United States is bullying Russia, trying to start a new Cold War so they can have weapon sales and prop up the dollar.
All right,
okay,
now,
we have a domestic police state here in the U.S.
All right, Alex,
losing
let's
our
move
friends.
On. Let's move on with the specifics of what's happening on the ground right now.
That got a little crazy, and that whole half-hour clip is posted up for you. Alex Jones up on Iranian television on Press TV. Shifting gears yet again, let's get into the enviro health world. Autism, BPA, HPV, CDC, and POT. First from Reuters, officials call off controversial autism study. Health officials have called off plans for a study examining a controversial type of treatment that some autism activists have touted as alternative medical therapy for children with the condition. The National Institute of Mental Health, or NIMH, which isn't that silver? I forget. On the periodic chart. The National Institute of Mental Health is part of the U.S. National Institutes of Health, NIH, and they said in a statement on Wednesday that it has canceled a study aimed at assessing the effectiveness of a treatment called chelation, C-H-E-L-A-T-I-O-N. Chelation is a type of therapy in which a man-made amino acid called EDTA is added to the blood, and it has been used to treat heavy metal poisoning. Some autism activists have advocated it on the theory, rejected by most scientists, that autism is triggered by exposure to mercury, a heavy metal, from childhood vaccines. So if we jump to the Washington Post, study finds no autism link in vaccine. A common vaccine given to children to protect them against measles, mumps, and rubellas is not linked to autism, a study published concludes. The findings contradict earlier research that had fueled fears of a possible link between childhood vaccinations and a steep increase in autism diagnoses. In February 1998, the Lancet Journal published a study by British researcher Andrew Wakefield of 12 children with autism and other behavioral problems that suggested the onset of their behavioral abnormalities was linked to receiving the MMR vaccine. The new study comes as the U.S. Court of Federal Claims in Washington is in the midst of evaluating evidence on whether children's vaccines are implicated in causing autism. A special master is evaluating three different kinds of claims, two of which specifically link the MMR vaccine with autism. And again, it's the mercury. It's also called thimerosal, and it is in the vaccines. This from the Globe and Mail. Another one, BPA, bisphenol A, may impair learning and memory. Exposure to bisphenol A, that's B-I-S-P-H-E-N-O-L-A, the hormonally active chemical used to make the linings of most tin cans and hard plastic bottles, may be able to alter brain function, impairing the ability to learn and remember, this according to a new study by researchers from Canada and the U.S. The study, conducted on monkeys whose brain development is similar to that of humans, raises the possibility that ailments such as depression, Alzheimer's disease, and schizophrenia may be linked to the controversial chemical. Almost all people living in industrialized societies are exposed to BPA as a result of trace amounts leaking from food and beverage containers. And there are tons of other links in there to places like Time and also the universities that did the research. But if we return yet again to your favorite HPV live cancer vaccine, Gardasil, from Merck, we've been following this story since February 2007 when Rick Perry tried to mandate that girls in Texas take Gardasil. Now, another front, Gardasil made mandatory for immigrants. This from Steve Watson. Immigrants seeking permanent legal residency in the U.S. are now mandated to take an expensive and controversial vaccine that has been linked with thousands of serious complaints and several deaths. The human papillomavirus, HPV, or the vaccine rather, known as Gardasil, is one of the five U.S. citizenship and immigration services. They recently added it to the required list, that according to Fox 8 News, with a link for you. Also, a linked up press release from the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services Agency confirms that the requirements for the vaccine went into effect on July 1st, 2008. The regulation represents a total dismissal of the recommendations of Dr. John Abramson, chairman of the CDC's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. In February 07, Abramson said that he and the 15-member panel at the CDC opposed making Gardasil mandatory because the sexually transmitted HPV is not a contagious disease like measles or chickenpox. And at $162 per dose, the three-dose vaccine is set to make millions in profits for Gardasil manufacturer Merck, a company that has a history of both lobbying intensely for state mandates and entering into crony deals to hoodwink Americans into believing HPV vaccinations are compulsory.
The U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services added 5 vaccines to the requirement list to become a legal permanent resident. On that new list, human papillomavirus, or HPV. The vaccine is Gardasil, and it's not required for U.S. citizens.
If the government is trying to take care of everyone, they should be doing it also to the citizens. However, they don't have the power to impose you as a citizen what vaccination you have.
The government does have the power to impose the vaccine on those trying to gain U.S. residency and says it should be given to females ages 11 to 26. Nia Flomo works with refugees and says cervical cancer, the cancer Gardasil helps prevent, is a leading cause of cancer death in women worldwide.
Some do not have the opportunity in their countries of origin to get this vaccine. So for public health purposes, this is a good idea that will protect them too.
The Gardasil vaccine comes in 3 doses. One dose costs $162, making it a very expensive vaccine.
It's a financial burden, in addition to every other burden that they have financially regarding this application.
Immigrants also have to get vaccines to protect against meningitis and chickenpox. Unlike those viruses, HPV is not highly contagious or airborne.
Even though it's sexually transmitted, once in your lifetime, you might end up having sex one disease. So we advise that you take it now to get protected just in case if you decide to have sex.
When you're an immigrant coming to the United States, you need to abide by the laws and regulations that the government have set up. And I think that in the big scheme of things, what they're trying to do is keep us safe.
In Greensboro, Roxanna Haynes, Fox 8 News.
More on the mass drugging of the masses and a follow-up on the story we first covered back in March. Drugs affect more drinking water. And again, from the Associated Press, who was doing some of the original investigative work on this. Testing prompted by an Associated Press story that revealed trace amounts of pharmaceuticals in drinking water supplies has shown that more Americans are affected by the problem than previously thought. At least 46 million. That's up from the 41 million people reported by the AP in March as part of an investigation into the presence of pharmaceuticals in the nation's waterways. The AP stories prompted federal and local legislative hearings, brought about calls for mandatory testing and disclosure, and led officials in at least 27 additional metro areas to analyze their drinking water. Positive tests were reported in 17 cases, including Reno, Nevada, Savannah, Georgia, Colorado Springs, Colorado, and Huntsville, Alabama. Results are pending in 3 others. If we jump to parallelnormal.org, or rather .com, pot kills superbugs. Several compounds in cannabis are known to kill bacteria. Now, Italian scientists, believe pot can take on today's superbugs. Antibacterial cannabinoids might also, quote, provide a more environmentally friendly alternative to synthetic antibacterial substances now widely used in personal care items, including soaps and cosmetics. This according to an announcement from the American Chemical Society. The ACS also suggests that marijuana-derived meds can be made without THC, pot's primary psychoactive substance. Finally, from the Daily Mail, teach the pleasure of gay sex to children as young as 5. Children as young as 5 should be taught to understand the pleasures of gay sex, according to leaders of a taxpayer-funded education project. Heads of the project have set themselves a goal of, quote, creating primary classrooms where queer sexualities are affirmed and celebrated. The ambition was revealed in documents prepared for the No Outsiders Project, run by researchers from universities and backed with £600,000 of public money provided by the Economic and Social Research Council. The pleasures of gay sex in the UK. Let's now jump to some Miltech news. It's WoW, that's World of Warcraft, Weather Wars, HARP, Mind Control, and Lasers. First of numerous times, from Danger Room, Pentagon researcher conjures Warcraft terror plot. The American military and intelligence communities are increasingly worried that would-be bin Ladens might gather in a virtual world to plan a real-life attack. But the spies haven't given many details about how it might be done. Now, a Pentagon researcher has laid out how such a terror plot might unfold. The planning ground is World of Warcraft, the main target of this possibly nuclear strike, the White House. There's been no public proof to date of terrorists hatching plots in virtual worlds, but online spaces like World of Warcraft are making some spooks, generals, and congressmen extremely nervous. They imagine terrorists rehearsing attacks in these worlds, just like the U.S. military trains with commercial shoot-'em-up games. The gang and the government, there's no difference. They worry that massively multiplayer games make it incredibly easy to gather plotters from around the world. But mostly, virtual worlds are nerve-wracking to spies because they're so hard to monitor. The accounts are pseudonymous, the access is global, the jargon is thick. And most of the spy agency's employees aren't exactly level 70 shamans. So in a presentation, with a link for you, it's a 7-meg PowerPoint presentation that was made late last week at the Director of National Intelligence Open Source Conference in Washington, Dr. Dwight Toves, T-O-A-V-S, a professor at the Pentagon-funded National Defense University, gave a bit of a primer on virtual worlds to an audience largely ignorant about what happens in these online spaces. Then he launched into a scenario to demonstrate how a meat space plot might be hidden by in-game chatter. And that article goes on, and there's lots of great screenshots of plotting made within World of Warcraft. But if we jump to another one from Paul Joseph Watson, we get them a lot here in Portland, Oregon. The beautiful, beautiful chemtrails. U.S. government mad scientists geoengineer the atmosphere. U.S. government scientists are bombarding the skies with the acid rain-causing pollutant sulfur dioxide in an attempt to fight global warming by, quote, geoengineering the planet. Despite the fact that injecting aerosols into the upper atmosphere carries with it a host of both known and unknown dangers. The proposal to disperse sulfur dioxide in an attempt to reflect sunlight was again raised in a London Guardian article this week entitled Geoengineering, the Radical Ideas to Combat Global Warming, in which Ken Caldiera, a leading climate scientist based at the Carnegie Institution in Stanford, California, promotes the idea of injecting the atmosphere with aerosols. If we return to Danger Room, Russia's HAARP explored. The U.S. military runs a facility way out in the woods of Alaska that beams hugely powerful radio waves into the ionosphere. Depending on who you believe, this high-frequency active auroral research program, HAARP, H-A-A-R-P, blasts out these transmissions in order to learn more about the electrically conductive layer of the atmosphere, or HAARP is designed to spy on unwitting foes, control the weather, and spew out death rays. In either event, HAARP wasn't the first installation of its kind. The Soviets had their own high-frequency ionospheric research center. It's now abandoned mostly, but the pictures of the place are very much worth a few clicks, and there's a lot of photos that you can check out up on Danger Room of a lot of weeds growing up this installation. There's an article from Time Magazine with the salacious title, "The Army's Totally Serious Mind Control Project." Soldiers barking orders at each other is so 20th century. That's why the U.S. Army has just awarded a $4 million contract to begin developing, quote, thought helmets that would harness silent brainwaves for secure communication among troops. Ultimately, the Army hopes the project will, quote, lead to direct mental control of military systems by thought alone. If this sounds insane, it would have been as recently as a few years ago. But improvements in computing power and a better understanding of how the brain works have scientists busy hunting for the distinctive neural fingerprints that flash through a brain when a person is talking to himself. The Army's initial goal is to capture those brain waves with incredibly sophisticated software that then translates the waves into audible radio messages for other troops in the field. It'd be radio without a microphone, says a doctor, the Army neuroscientist overseeing the program, Dr. Elmar Schmeisser. Because soldiers are already trained to talk in clean, clear, and formulaic ways, it would be a very small step to have them think that way. And there's links in there. Of course, there have been video games attempting to use mind control. There's stuff from the Sydney Morning Herald and also Defense Link. And also finding Dulcinea.com. But if we jump to Aviation Week, by way of military.com, 747-based chemical laser tests begin. Longer duration firings of high-energy lasers on board the U.S. Missile Defense Agency's Boeing 747 Airborne Laser, ABL, are getting underway following the completion of the first light initial firing milestone on board the aircraft in a ground test on September 7th. The test, conducted at Edwards Air Force Base in California, lasted only a fraction of a second, says a spokesman for Northrop Grumman, the makers of the chemical oxygen iodine laser, COIL. But this was long enough to prove, quote, the laser is ready to demonstrate the power output sufficient to destroy a ballistic missile in flight. So that's the airborne laser. If we jump and stay on the Miltech tip, if we jump to Army Times, a disturbing story. Helping people at home may become a permanent part of the active Army. And now we'll start this off by saying that basically in any other country, having the military on the streets would make you, you know, a third world police state, but I guess it's not fascism when we do it. So again, this is from the horse's ass's mouth, from the Army Times. The 3rd Infantry Division's 1st Brigade Combat Team has spent 35 of the last 60 months in Iraq patrolling in full battle rattle, helping restore essential services and escorting supply convoys. Now they're training for the same mission with a twist, at home. Beginning October 1st, for 12 months, the 1st Brigade Combat Team, BCT, will be under the day-to-day control of the U.S. Army North, the Army Service component of NORTHCOM, Northern Command, as an on-call federal response force for natural or man-made emergencies and disasters, all including terror. It's not the first time an active-duty unit has been tapped to help at home. In August 2005, for example, when Hurricane Katrina unleashed hell in Mississippi and Louisiana, several active duty units were pulled from various posts and mobilized to this area, or to those areas. But this new mission marks the first time an active unit has been given a dedicated assignment to NORTHCOM, a joint command established in 2002 to provide command and control for federal homeland defense efforts and coordinate defense support of civil authorities. And again, getting you desensitized to seeing the military on the street. And again, we had the military and we had Blackwater in New Orleans during Katrina in high and dry areas confiscating guns. But there's something interesting to note that where the 3rd Infantry Division's 1st Brigade Combat Team is located, they're at Stewart Army Base, stewart.army.mil. So an interesting addendum to that is to check out the 9/11 flight paths and the Stewart Air Force Base. But if we move on into Police State USA, pandemic drills, continuity of government, corruption, and surveillance. This, again, they tell you all about it. This from the National Guard Bureau. Vigilant Guard, another terror drill. Vigilant Guard managers put the kaboom in terrorism exercises. Kaboom! Exercise managers for the Vigilant Guard Homeland Security exercise here added realism September 16th by blowing up balloons filled with explosive gas. Kapow! This is very professionally written. The kaboom and kapow with capitalization and exclamation points are in there. They tested those balloons and then they tested the noisemakers that will prompt police SWAT teams to move in on suspected fake terrorist hideouts at a hotel. Along with phony blown-up cars, it's all been fabricated by the National Guard civilian exercise managers. Vigilant Guard began on September 12th with a regional tabletop exercise at the Guam Guard's Joint Forces Headquarters. It continued through the week, culminating with a simulated terrorist attack on the island's Tuman Beach, which is a popular tourist and vacation spot. A little bit of corruption, and it seems we always cover some agency losing something, whether it's money or God knows what. But in this case, it's the ATF, and they're missing 418 laptops and 76 guns. This from the Associated Press. The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosions. Yes, there's an E at the end of ATF now. They lost 76 weapons and hundreds of laptops over 5 years. The Justice Department reported Wednesday with the 3.5 meg PDF for you to download the report from Glenn Fine and the Justice Department. And they, of course, blame carelessness and sloppy record keeping. Oh, it's always, they're just incompetent. It's the incompetence excuse. We didn't mean to make Iraq a big mess. I don't think we had any idea terrorists would use planes and fly them into buildings. They know all these things. They claim ignorance, and then you say, oh, well, how could they do that? They can't even get Iraq right. And again, Iraq is going beautifully. But I digress. 35 of the missing handguns, rifles, tasers, and other weapons were stolen, as were 50 laptops, the internal audit found. Two of the stolen weapons were used in crimes. The audit by Justice Department Inspector General Glenn A. Fine found inadequate oversight of weapons and laptops resulted in significant rates of losses. And there's links for you to take you down further down that hole. But if we jump to Oklahoma, out of KTEN, Oklahoma firefighters team up with WMD unit for a terror drill. So the National Guard's 63rd Weapons of Mass Destruction Team out of Norman, Oklahoma, paired up with local emergency responders to conduct a mock drill. The drill involved a chemical release in the Ardmore Convention Center with a large group of people inside. KTN's Haley Holiday reports.
Today in Ardmore, the National Guard's 63rd Weapons of Mass Destruction Team out of Norman paired up with local emergency responders to conduct a mock drill.
The drill involved a chemical release in the Ardmore Convention Center with a large group of people inside. KTN's Haley Holiday attended today's mock demonstration. She's in the Ardmore newsroom with more. Haley?
Randy, Ardmore firefighters say this is the first chance they have gotten to work with the mass destruction team and claim today's scenario was important to practice in case this type of incident were to happen here in Ardmore. Authorities with the National Guard say the team trains with emergency responders around the state, each time having a different scenario. Everything was covered from putting on protective gear to getting victims outside to washing off chemical residue that could have covered their suits. Both emergency responders and National Guard officials say it's important to test how agencies would react to a situation such as this.
The biggest deal is if there is an incident, we don't want the first time that they see us is that a real incident.
The more training, the better anywhere, and hazmat especially, because we're really, it's kind of a new field for us, so we really need to concentrate a lot of our time in training our hazmat equipment.
National Guard members say today's chemical release event would last all day, just as if it were the real thing. Reporting live in the Ardmore newsroom, Haley Holiday, K10 News.
Thanks, Haley. And I believe I swiped that video and put it up on YouTube. I can't remember. But if we jump to WCAX out of Burlington, Vermont, Burlington participates in pandemic experiment. Burlington is one of 9 test markets in the country taking part in a flu pandemic preparation exercise. And there's a link for you to pandemicflu.gov and their little program, Take the Lead. The experiment will focus on prevention, like hand washing, and what to do in case of an outbreak. Health authorities say preparing is crucial because it's not a question of if we will have another major flu outbreak, but when. Now, our man Greg Nixon from DailyDoseOfTerror.blogspot.com is from Burlington, Vermont, and he happened to show up at the old Take the Lead press conference and asked this.
I'm sure Health Commissioner Wendy Davis would be happy to take questions about Take the Lead. Thanks for being here.
Hi. I was wondering, are there contingency plans for forced quarantines, forced vaccinations, and if so, are any private military contractors involved in these plans?
I can speak to some of that, and I may ask our state epidemiologist, Court Loaf, to comment. It's interesting, when we think about how a pandemic might unfold, we use a system that's somewhat similar to the hurricane rating system. And so we have a series of recommendations that, and it's literally category 1 through 5, that have to do with recommendations that we would make about things like either not closing schools or closing them, if we were to close them, for how long. So I would characterize that, I guess, as a series of recommendations that we can make. I don't think I know the answer to the rest of your question. I don't know if Court does. Court Loaf is our state epidemiologist for Vermont.
Hi. Thank you, Wendy. I'm Mayor. The issue of isolation and quarantine does come up in the context of pandemic flu and other infectious disease hazards. In the context of pandemic flu, our recommendation will be for to encourage people who are sick to self-isolate, or to encourage people who may have been exposed to someone who is sick to self-quarantine. But certainly we're not going to mandate or enforce isolation or quarantine in a situation of pandemic flu, because the reality is we don't have the resources to do it, nor will that necessarily work to prevent the spread of influenza.
It's 2 years ago, Burlington Free Press ran an article that Camp Johnson's preparing cots is a detention area in the event of such a contingency. So I was just wondering if you had anything to elaborate on that. So.
Yeah, I don't know anything about that.
Okay, thank you very much.
So that's Greg Nixon of DailyDoseOfTerror.blogspot.com asking the Take the Lead folks in Burlington, Vermont, if they have any contingency plans for, you know, forced vaccinations and quarantines. But if we jump to the Buffalo News, more pandemic propaganda. Drive-through clinic offers booster shots targeting hepatitis A. There were no burgers or fries at this drive-through. And again, I've always pointed out these terror drill, the articles and things, they always start with some funny, oh, burgers and fries, or it's not really real. This weekend, hepatitis A booster shots are being given out drive-through style at the Amherst Highway Garage. Hundreds of people rolled down their windows and pulled up their sleeves to receive the booster shot in their arms, all without leaving their cars. We've had minivans with entire families pull up and single cars too, said Daniel Neverth, Erie County Deputy Commissioner for Emergency Medical Services. By 3 o'clock in the afternoon, more than 300 people had participated. Jumping down on the article, the idea was to administer the shots in the most efficient way possible. But it also served as an exercise in giving out mass doses of a vaccine in the event of a pandemic outbreak or biological attack. Neverth said Erie County is part of the Center for Disease Control and Prevention's City Readiness Initiative. Participants are encouraged to develop new ways to administer medicines to the masses. Jumping to WTOP. Military aircraft to conduct training exercises over Washington, D.C. If you see and hear military aircraft overhead Wednesday and Thursday, or rather, if you did, it's just an exercise. The North American Aerospace Defense Command was conducting a two-day exercise in the D.C. area. The exercise, a series of training flights, is designed to hone NORAD's intercept and identification operations. Civil Air Patrol and Coast Guard helicopters will participate in the exercise. The training flights did occur in the late night and early morning hours. And of course, in the event of inclement weather, NORAD will run the exercise on the next clear day until the exercise has been completed. Moving to govtech.com. Nation inadequately prepared for severe pandemic. States are making significant progress towards safeguarding their citizens against an influenza pandemic, but the nation as a whole remains inadequately prepared for a severe pandemic outbreak, according to a new report by the National Governors Association Center for Best Practices, NGA Center. The report, Pandemic Preparedness in the States, an Assessment of Progress and Opportunity, with a PDF download for you, presents an overall appraisal of the current level of pandemic preparedness in the states and offers recommendations for improving in the areas. Even though this issue largely has fallen off the public's radar, states recognize that successfully managing a pandemic outbreak requires a sustained effort to combat the threat in all sectors of the economy and in society as a whole. You see which they put first. The conclusions of this report serve as a vital national service. They demonstrate both the extent of our readiness as well as the gaps in our current preparedness. And again, many links in there to the NGA Center, nga.org, as well as Blacklisted News and others. If we now move to AEI, our good neocon think tank friends. Neocon think tank says the U.S. still lacks good continuity plan. And this is kind of a long sort of editorial piece. But they basically say all the things that we've done aren't enough. All the presidential decision directives and executive orders that basically de facto make Bush a dictator at the drop of a hat, that's still not enough, according to the American Enterprise Institute. 7 years is a long time, but the enormity and depravity of the acts are fresh, speaking, of course, of 9/11. Nonetheless, one would think that 7 years is enough time for an even slow-moving political system to create basic insurance to prevent the kind of chaos and injury to the American constitutional system that would come with another more successful attack on official Washington. Never mind In one of the more shameworthy lapses in our dysfunctional government, especially in Congress, nothing constructive has been done to protect our elections, our legislative branch, our presidential succession process, or our Supreme Court from the consequences of the kind of terrorist attack that every expert we have believes is likely to occur in the future. The Presidential Succession Act of 1947, with a link for you to read more about that, has no relevance to the challenges and potential disasters of 2008 and beyond. So again, all that we have, all the PDDs, all the executive orders, all the continuity of governments, situations that are in place that could be clicked live, it's still not enough, according to these guys. Again, they want more consolidation. If we jump to anti-fascist calling, mass surveillance plan fast-tracked by the NYPD, and of course we've gone over Operation Sentinel in New York many times, but last month, anti-fascist calling reported on a scheme by the New York City Police Department to encircle Manhattan with thousands of surveillance cameras and sensors that would photograph all vehicles entering the city. Information captured by this intrusive system would be stored in a huge database for an undisclosed period of time. That plan is now moving forward with a vengeance. And there's links in there, again, to antifascist-calling.blogspot.com, and you can read the first posting I had of Operation Sentinel that just goes back to August of this year. The Times Union has New York offering enhanced RFID driver's license starting last Tuesday. New Yorkers will be able to buy new driver's licenses containing a radio chip that will let them travel between the U.S. and Canada or Mexico without a passport. That's right. Remember, you need a passport now. The new enhanced driver's license will cost an additional $30 on top of the standard $50 license fee, and it will also allow those on boats or ships to travel to Bermuda and the Caribbean nations without a passport. Starting in June, federal law will dictate that passports or other proof of citizenship or an enhanced license will be needed to visit neighboring countries, including Canada and Mexico. This is an opportunity for individuals at their option to get through the borders more quickly, said Ken Brown, a spokesman for the State Department of Motor Vehicles. So again, the eminently hackable radio frequency identification devices are going into your driver's license and all the other places they already are that we've gone over a million times here. If we jump to 911blogger.com, Mukasey's Justice Department codifies COINTELPRO into the new FBI ground rules. Every once in a while, the Washington Post actually prints something of note. Yesterday, they published this. Rule changes would give FBI agents extensive new powers. With a link for you. Previously, the FBI was required to, you know, have a case before they started screwing around with you. Under Mukasey's new rules, we now have a situation ripe for abuse. The Justice Department is currently working out the wording for placing, quote, undisclosed participants in organizations just in time for the November elections. And so, speaking of, in a sidestep kind of way, Lieberman wins. YouTube bans videos that incite violence. We covered this story several months ago. The video sharing service YouTube is banning submissions that involve inciting others to violence, quote-unquote, following criticism from Senator Joseph Lieberman that the site was too open to terrorist groups disseminating militant propaganda. Militant propaganda. So, again, censoring the web, beginning in earnest. We've got Military-Industrial Complex 2.0 from Information Clearinghouse, basically telling the tale of how the military-industrial complex used to be soldiers picking up a gun, but now it's going to be the high heels. It's going to be translating documents, collecting intelligence, interpreting for soldiers and interrogators, approving contracts, draft reports to Congress, and oversight for other private contractors. They're going to fill prescriptions, fit prosthetics, and arrange for physical therapy and psychiatric care. Top to bottom, the Pentagon's war machine is no longer just driven by, but staffed by, corporations. And again, that's what Mussolini said. Fascism is really corporatism, but we're doing it in reverse here. So instead of the states taking over the corporations, here the corporations have taken over the state. If we hit the newspaper.com real quick, photo ticket cameras to track drivers nationwide. Private companies in the U.S. are hoping to use red light cameras and speed cameras as the basis for a nationwide surveillance network similar to the one that will be active next year in the U.K. RedFlex and the American Traffic Solutions, ATS, the two top photo enforcement providers in the U.S., are quietly shopping new motorist tracking options to prospective state and local government clients. RedFlex explained the company's latest developments in an August 7th meeting with Homestead, Florida officials. And again, there's links you can read more about the red light cameras. And of course, we've covered in the past how Lockheed Martin has been caught shortening the times of the yellows to get more tickets. But if we come back to Portland, Oregon, I saw this in the Willamette Week, one of our free weeklies here, but you can hit it up online, wweek.com. Smile for the cameras. Portland Public Schools is giving the bus company that schleps around students $18,000 to buy 20 digital cameras to monitor rider behavior on district buses. The school board okayed the expenditure at its September 15th meeting on top of the district's $58 million contract with Laidlaw Transit, now doing business as First Student. Andy Liebenguth of the district's transportation office says no incident precipitated the camera purchase. The district isn't targeting a specific route. It plans to rotate the cameras, which will supplement the 15 cameras First Student already uses. And so we're going to have to leave it right there. We went around the world and came right back to Portland, Oregon. There's tons more news to go over, and it's still up on MediaMonarchy.com. Everything from Yemen and Palin and JFK and an Illuminati agent. Or just some dumbass kid who got stuck trying to do a robbery. But we'll get into that a little bit later. But as we like to close these episodes, run down a quick list of some of the interesting visitors to MediaMonarchy.com. We had the VA, Department of Veteran Affairs, out of New York City. They Googled Ewan Cameron, of course, mind control master at Cold Springs Harbor. Mitsubishi Chemical America, out of Chesapeake, Virginia, Googled Steve Darst, Silver Bridge. That's, of course, about the Silver Bridge collapse in West Virginia that somehow ties in with the Mothman. Hewlett-Packard, out of New York, Googled Richard Andrew Grove, 2008. The Frederick News Post Googled Project Shad, which you should Google as well, Project Shad, S-H-A-D, Ivins. The Corpus Christi Army Depot out of Texas Googled Martial Law Kansas. United Talent Agency out of Beverly Hills hit me up from a link on channel101.com reading about CERN. The BBC Googled film on George Bush to be released. That's, of course, Oliver Stone's new W. The CDC out of Atlanta were checking out the post from a few months ago, TSA Gangsters. We also had American Society of Mechanical Engineers reading about the Bayer pesticide factory explosion in West Virginia. Motorola General Systems out of New York City hit me up from a link on whatreallyhappened.com about the mysterious death of key 9/11 witness Barry Jennings. So did the State of Missouri Office of Administration, and so did the Space Age Federal Credit Union, all reading about Barry Jennings, as well as 20th Century Fox. But we also had the Utica Mutual Insurance Company out of New York Google Gardasil illness. And finally, the Stevens Institute of Technology Googled Spy Chopper. So again, thank you, my friends. That's going to do it for episode 92 of MediaMonarchy.com. Coming to you September 19th, 2008. Always more news to come. Always more up on MediaMonarchy.com. Get in touch with me through there, and we'll keep learning, and we'll keep getting through this, my friends. So like my man Webster Tarpley says, get active or get radioactive. Take care.
the diary, or whether he did not or not would, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.